today's version of the biggest story of the day, that the Senate panel investigating the Watergate bugging is convinced that it was directed from the White House, which confirms something May wrote back in July of last year in the Realist magazine. May, are you there? All set.
Okay, what do we talk about today?
Let's talk about the Watergate.
The Watergate? Well, let's talk about the Watergate. Wait a minute. We'll talk about Premier Thu. He's coming over to visit our Congress this next week, you know. And he let his opponent out of jail because he'd been in jail for 6 years, his political opponent, because he wanted to make a nice impression in front of our Congress. And the news media said that Thu would not be visiting Richard Nixon, who would be in California, but he'd make a stop at the LBJ ranch. So you can make of that what you want. I think history plays a really funny role. We only poured $81 billion into that country for the last 10 years, $81 billion a year. We're not going to see him. Our president is going to meet Premier Thu. And I think he and LBJ and Thu have a lot in common that history's going to go down and tell us about. But we're right in the middle of a very important time in American history. And I have tried for 2 years. I've been on the radio here for 2 years in May when the Pentagon Papers broke. And I tried to turn people on to the history of their times. That's what this is all about, to understand it. I went to Stanford in 1940 to 43 when we were in war in Europe and fighting Japan. And my parents told me nothing about what the war was about. I didn't understand it at all. The history of my times was nothing. I was studying Greek civilization at Stanford and Roman civilization and art, history of art. And the only way I knew there was a war going out was we had less silk stockings and there weren't nylon those days, and meat rationing. And outside of that, I didn't know a thing about the war. But along came the killing of John Kennedy, and I had 5 children by then, and I decided that I wasn't going to be as stupid about my children's generation as I had been when I was growing up in college, including college and as a young adult with turmoil in the world, and studied the John Kennedy assassination for 9 years. When the Pentagon Papers broke 2 years ago, at KLRB, I came on and did a show, an hour show, about the meaning of them at that time, and I've been on 1 hour a week ever since. In 1972, I had my home for sale and was going to leave this country. I was going to Canada. I felt we had a police state coming, martial law. I knew that the White House, the Justice Department, the police department, the sheriffs, the FBI, the CIA worked together, planned political assassinations, killed the president, killed our civil rights leaders, and that they were going to have another coup d'etat and take total martial law. And this was in 72. On June the 17th, 1972, 5 men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel. And the name Sturr just rang a bell. He was apprehended by the FBI immediately after the Kennedy assassination. Kennedy was supposed to have been killed in Miami and then Chicago. Those were covered. Secret Service caught the circumstances then. They got him in Dallas 3 weeks later. Sturgis was one of the men that was apprehended. He had an arsenal of weapons, and he worked with the Miami group that was in if Kennedy had been killed there. They canceled a motorcade and used helicopters to a building, and he wasn't killed there. Sturgis reappeared at the Watergate Hotel with 3 names I didn't know then, Barker, Gonzalez, and Martinez. Gonzalez was a common name. Oswald sat with a Gonzalez on La Roca bus going down to Mexico City. I had studied all of this for 8 years. But it's a very common name. It's like Smith in America. But Mr. McCord was arrested, and he was chief of security for the committee to reelect the president, and he was the chief of security for the protection of Richard Nixon in Miami. And this was a strange combination at the Watergate Hotel. You had a man who was chief of security to protect the life of Richard Nixon at the time of the convention, caught at a hotel bugging the Democratic headquarters with men who had hotel reservations for demonstrations. They were going to have provocateurs, and had hotel reservations to praise Nixon for his bombing Haiphong at the time, which would get the hippies and the radicals all up in the air. So you had a team of people planning demonstrations and the man that was supposed to keep the streets quiet. I realized by the next day, June the 18th, that the Watergate story was the biggest story in the country. It was the biggest day in American history outside of the Normandy invasion when we went into Europe and began to turn the tide back against Hitler. It was the beginning of hope for the third world, for the black, the Chicano, the Yippies, the hippies. If they would use it right, they would take this little episode all the way back to Dallas, where it all began. We had a lot of political assassinations and murders and Cold War intrigues since 1945 done by the National Security Council, but nothing, they hadn't been caught, and their mode of operation really began in Dallas. I just finished an article this week. It's called Murderville, USA. It's the next one for the, I'm going to do for the realist. Just finished it. The blanket umbrella of more specific part of this operation. But this was the biggest day in American history, and there was no turning back. And I sat in my study for 3 weeks and wrote that article for Paul Krasner, the realist, called Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? And if any of you don't have the copy, send a postcard or a letter with some money. It's 50 cents in postage to KLRB and Carmel, and we'll send you a copy. It's still a handbook for understanding the Watergate affair. And I was telling some of the kids in the station here, the announcers, before we went on the air, if they save the articles today that they haven't missed for the last 8 months, if you'd cut everything out of the Watergate and put it in the file for the next 20 years, there's going to be no end to the losses, exposures. It's going to go on and on and on. It's going to unfold. If it took 27 years to build this up, it's going to be going 27 years to dig it out. It doesn't take as long for the dominoes to fall down or for the sandcastle to fall down as it does to build these things up, and it's moving along very quickly, but it's an interesting operation because if you follow the Watergate, and I'll show you why, you'll understand how your government has been run for 27 years, and when you get all the pus out of that sick body, maybe we'll get it back together on its feet again. Now, I picked up the telephone January the 18th, and I called a man in Washington, D.C. His name is Bernard Fensterwald. He's the attorney for James Ray, who has tried to get the National Archives open to get the truth about Ray, who didn't kill Martin Luther King. Bernard Fensterwald is the head of the committee to investigate assassinations, and he has an operation there where he gets information and works on public officials to get the Senate behind these conspiracies. Bernard is a graduate of Harvard and went to Oxford. He's written law books. He was a Senate crimes investigator for Kefauver and Long. And if Kefauver was vice president, he was in charge of foreign policy and law. He's from Tennessee. Kefauver is writing a book on the assassinations. He has a chapter every once in a while on computer and automation, and then there'll be in a total book. Adlai Stevenson, Dag Hammarskjöld, and his friend Estes Kefauver, killed while he was investigating the crimes. Fensterwald, I picked up the phone and I called Bernard Fensterwald June the 18th. I said, these are our boys. And then Martha Mitchell came out 4 days later that she was kidnapped. And I said, for sure, this is the team. Bernard, this is, you know, as far as political assassination, these are the boys. I got on the phone because he had just had lunch with Fletcher Prouty that day. I talked about Fletcher on our show last week. He was CIA liaison in London, former CIA. He has a book coming out that I mentioned that's just about ready to come out on political assassinations and the black arts of espionage inside the CIA while he was a member of the CIA. He was a paid agent in London. I talked to Prouty on the phone. Well, this week, when it was a very important day for the Watergate group because they were supposed to go before the judge to get their sentencing. And James McCord took on a new lawyer, and now we're in a different ball game, and I'll explain why. His lawyer's name is Bernard Fensterwald. So if you don't know where America is going, just get your San Francisco Chronicle dated today. It's March the 29th, and about the fifth or sixth page is a picture of Bernard Fensterwald with James McCord. Now, this is what McCord said when he changed his story and wanted to tell before he got his sentencing. He said that he's going to cover the wide spectrum of what happened, the allegations and the political campaigns, the broader campaign of political espionage. This is a quote from the was in the Chronicle this week. It is in everybody's best interest that we cover a range over a wide spectrum, apparently covering allegations of a broader campaign and sabotage in addition to the Watergate bugging. I'm interpreting this news for you because if you don't know the name Fensterwald and you don't know the work he's done on past political assassination and the switch that he is McCord's attorney and they're going to cover a broad range, takes us back to the original article I did in The Realist, where I said if we follow the piece of scotch tape that was left on the door at the night when those men were arrested, there was a little piece of scotch tape on the door when they got caught, and then somebody came, the guard at the hotel came down, and those men were arrested. In The Realist article, I said if we follow that little piece of scotch tape all the way down, it's going to take us all the way to Dallas, Texas, pass through all the political assassinations. And you're going to be hearing, as I say, Watergate for the next 20 years. There's no way back. I can see impeaching the top officials. I can see them being charged with murder. There's any possibility wide open. And I am going to one point here about what the Watergate was about, because a lot of people wanted to cover it up. You know, the papers this morning, there's an article about Joseph Kraft, and the cover page of Newsweek is the Watergate affair, and Time magazine, the Watergate scandal. I had a press conference in L.A. in August about the whole framework of the Watergate, what it was, but those men were so afraid to touch it. They thought they could put the genie back in the bottle, and there's no way to do it. Joseph Kraft today says a flurry of development has suddenly been transformed from a sideshow to a political bomb. It was no sideshow from the day those men were caught. And people wonder, well, what's going on? And at the White House, what's going on? Joseph Kraft says at the outset, it seemed pure nuttiness. Now, Joseph Kraft and the media is responsible, anybody, for all these political assassinations. When you get a man who's the chief of security for 19 years of the CIA, an ex-FBI man, and the Attorney General of the United States, the Assistant Attorney General, Robert Marty, and all these people in there, there's no nuttiness about that. Those are our top law and order officials, you know, making the rules of the grand jury, all the repressions and inquisitions we've felt they designed for us ever since John Kennedy was killed. The tax squads, the mace, the helicopters, crime statistics, those are their babies, and there wasn't anything nuttiness about this whole affair. Now, what the Watergate was about, for those of you who are beginning to take an interest in it, who hoped it would fade away and therefore wouldn't read it, or were selective in their reading but can't avoid it now, it's everywhere. The Watergate affair was the fact that the fears that I had in 1972, that there would be a coup d'etat, that the government would be overthrown, was achieved by these particular men. That Louis Tackwood, who was my guest on this show 2 weeks ago, he was in Carmel for a few days. Louis Tackwood was one of the men hired to kill Richard Nixon and kill Spiro Agnew. He sat in my home. He was on your radio station. Here's a man who was the 10th top provocateur in the United States, who had the job of blowing up the stand where these men would be at the National Convention in San Diego. And he realized it was wrong, and he surfaced and put his life on the line and said, no, I can't do this. Tackwood wanted to tell what was happening, and he had a press conference in Los Angeles, and they ignored him. They pretended they covered it, but then they never looked up his allegations. And what they were doing was they weren't robbing the Democrats, and they weren't just taking tapes to see where the Democrats were going to be. What they were doing was planting evidence so that after Nixon and Agnew were killed, they could blame the Democrats for the murder. Now, that's what it's about. And I think it's very simple to see that they had tapes going over to the Howard Johnson Hotel where Baldwin was, and one of the Democrats, or several of them in the office, were registered Democrats, but they were actually Republicans. And they could be on the phone and they could have conversations about what was going to happen. And then if the president was killed, the security says, oh, our security's so good that we just picked up this information, and here they are planning the killing of Kennedy, of Nixon. Well, it didn't work that way. They were caught at the last hour. They were caught, and so we have a situation where the government wasn't overthrown. Now, there was a second team, and I think we were getting ready for a martial law, and I've talked about it. But I'm very optimistic now because they were caught. McCord talked, and they didn't expect it. The second team can't operate that fast, you see. So that all the people that would be the follow-ups, that they had these men nicely tucked into jail and promise them the goodies when they get out, their follow-ups couldn't come in that quickly, because this was a very quick thing for James McCord to do after being with the CIA all those years in charge of security. I want to talk about something which involves the CIA and a plan of operation, and I don't want to forget it before we go to the Watergate. I'm going to digress 1 minute. There's a program tonight on television called The Pueblo. It's about the Pueblo. I'm not sure the hour or the station. But that was a situation of provocateurs, too. The Pueblo was sent into South Vietnam, and I tie it into the Watergate because when I talk about American history, I want you to see your times, you young people that are listening and going to college, to see how this group, this espionage group, operated, because no longer can they operate that way. Once we're on to their methods, we can watch it again and again and again. You see, Hitler had his Reichstag fire, but we didn't catch on to all our little Reichstags, and now we find out that the Gulf of Tonkin thing was provoked, and the Pentagon Papers shows how we did provocations. So I want to show you, in tying all of our history together, and not just staying with the Watergate, I do want to say that the situation in the Pueblo was that Butcher was sent, the commander was sent into the territorial waters beyond our agreement of what was safe. But the panel on his ship didn't tell him he was off base, see. All he had was instructions to be captured if the enemy comes. But he thought he was in safe territory. He was actually inside enemy territory where we shouldn't have been, with a spy ship. The Pueblo was a CIA spy ship. So they were attacked, and they couldn't attack back because the ship had guns and the guns were locked up, because the Pueblo men were meant to die. And if they died, we could say, remember the Pueblo. The bumper stickers were already printed, remember the Pueblo. And people had them on their car, but they really didn't know the significance of what it was, except that the men were locked up for a while. Well, Butcher, you know, the guns wouldn't shoot, and they couldn't destroy all the instrument panels far enough. And the life of Butcher was so interesting because he was an orphan. He had no mother or father, and he was raised. This is his version of what happened. He was raised alone, and he got to know the men on his ship and as his own children, and he wouldn't let them die. The orders were to die, like Gary Powers was supposed to die over the Soviet Union. It would end the summit conference, the U-2 thing. They have suicide kits, injections, they're supposed to die, and he didn't die either. But Butcher didn't die, and he didn't let his boys die. So we didn't have a cause célèbre or provocation to go against North Korea. Again, they did all the wrong things, so the Navy tried to get down on him later. And I understand that the movie is a very moving document about our times, and it's about the Cold War, and it's about provocateurs. So I boycott television, and we're going to go into that most of the time, except that maybe once every 60 or 80 days there's an hour worthwhile. And I think you should make a note while you're listening to listen and watch the Butcher story tonight. I'm sure it's going to be good, not a complete whitewash. The reviews of it lend themselves that way. Okay, we'll get back to the significance of the Watergate. I didn't want to forget that one point. Fensterwald's going to carry this thing. Now, if he works for, Fensterwald writes articles, he's putting out books on assassinations, he gives articles to Computer and Automation, various chapters. That's the magazine I refer to all the time, and before the show's over, I'll give you the address if you want to start ordering it. We can go from the Watergate to the J. Edgar Hoover death. I think it was, he was killed. I think the circumstances are very fishy. I think it gave the Republicans those extra 20 to 26 million votes of the Southern strategy. The Murray Chotiner team that is written up in the paper today, their idea with Nixon always was break down your enemy and then build yourself up. They weren't satisfied with their own past records. The Southern strategy, they weren't so sure that Nixon would win. It could be that he would combine, Muskie or McGovern would combine with Ted Kennedy, and Nixon couldn't win. But that extra 20 to 26 million votes was very important. And a lot of people thought it was time to get rid of J. Edgar Hoover. And another reason was that the CIA was combining their power with the FBI. It was a consolidation of power. They're trying to pull in the White House, but they're not going to get away with it now. The impoundment of funds was conceived by Dean, who was named as an espionage agent by McCord this week. So how can you impound all federal funds and veto power when a 30-year-old lawyer who's going to be in jail for sabotage conceived of that? Just like G. Gordon Liddy, who's in jail right now, conceived of the idea of the secret 10 to 20 million before April. Well, they needed it for their espionage money, but he's in jail, so I'm sure that the law of impounding that Mr. Dean took on will have to be reversed as we move along and find out who's really running this country. Then we have to go, we have to follow that little scotch tape from the Watergate down to George Wallace, from J. Edgar Hoover. We go to George Wallace, and then there's Ted Kennedy, the killing of Mary Jo Kopechne, who was employed by George Smathers at one time, who had to be murdered in order to frame Ted Kennedy. They couldn't kill the third Kennedy. I still don't think the Democrats have enough sense or intelligence as a political party to have cared if Ted Kennedy had died. You know, I think the Republicans gave them too much credit that if we kill the three brothers, somebody will catch on. But I haven't met 10 Democrats that know what's going on even today. At the time of the election, I saw Democrats, and I said, this is why it's the biggest thing you've got going. You should be using it full speed. And they looked the other way, and 50% of all the registered Democrats are Republican espionage spies. This can be backed by Donald Segretti or Kalmbach. They only pay. Their espionage money is for Democrats. The floating Democrats on this peninsula, I can name a handful or two hands full, are Republicans returning in information to the government. That party is so sabotaged, and the sincere Democrats can't get their head together yet that even if Ted Kennedy had been killed, they wouldn't have known what happened. People wonder why these forces are moving and how the Watergate keeps opening up. And I say that the forces of history, the decisions of history, aren't made for the masses of people out there. The masses couldn't care less one way or the other whether Hitler took France in one day, or whether he took it in 30 days or 100 days, or whether America, well, they did care when America invaded. But up to that time, people couldn't care less. Once they had a taste of Hitler, they were glad to see us come. But they could have accommodated, a lot of people could have accommodated to him, too, you know, if they had to. Most people sit there, and particularly the Democrats, and take this kind of step. But there's enough people who get hurt by the kind of imperialism or greed that the corporate structure is putting down on everybody, that they are rising up against Richard Nixon and company, including a few people who care, researchers and people like Bud Fensterwald, who are working very hard, who care, who are going to unravel this knot. So we're going to find out if we kill Mary Kopechne, and then they could go on to Memphis, Tennessee, where Fensterwald knows that James Ray didn't do it, that an espionage team did it, and he knows where they were airlifted out of town and where the gunman stood, and who financed that operation, and who covered it. And then we go up to the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, where Robert Kennedy was killed that made Richard Nixon the president, and then to Dallas. And we find where the blood really spilled for our domestic civil war, the one I'm writing about. That is the domestic counterintelligence at home, where the blood in Dallas really splashed to show you that the war was against our people and the democratic process and the electoral process. Well, the Watergate story has a lot of facets to it. This week's news broke open because James McCord said, number one, there was political pressure on him to plead guilty. Number two, there was perjury at his trial of public officials. Number three, more public officials were named, and he's naming them every day. The first person he named was Jed Magruder, who's now in the Department of Commerce. And then he named James Dean, the White House lawyer. You're right at the door of Richard Nixon, but he's getting it from every side now. It's hard not to feel sorry for him until you remember what he did to all these people like Voorhees and Helen Douglas and Alger Hiss going to jail. And when you think of what he's done in Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos, you can only feel sorry for him about 1 minute, but sometimes history's really playing the same fate it did to Lyndon Johnson when McBird was on Broadway and everybody knew that he had a part in the Kennedy assassination. He had to isolate himself. It may be that Nixon will... Well, I can't imagine how a man can stand this pressure, and any number of possibilities can take place now. But McCord said more were involved. Then he said, I fear for my life. Well, we're going back to that in a minute. He says, not only my own, but my family. And I can tell you from personal experience in my own family that what the system's capable of doing, and whether or not they reach my own family, there's a lot of evidence still dangling there in the death of my own daughter. The court says they did. If they do it to him, they could do it to me, and for sure they could do it. But he's not safe, and if you don't think they'd take the lives of families, ask James McCord. He's been in this for 21 years. He says, I'm not afraid of my own life, but my family. Now, he also said, this is important, James McCord said, I don't feel confident in talking with FBI agents or the grand jury because the U.S. attorneys work for the Department of Justice or other government representatives. Now, this is historically important. Why should the San Quentin Six, why should you or me go to an inquisition of a grand jury if he doesn't feel safe that the grand juries are stacked and represent the conspirators? Don't they represent the hippies, the Panthers, the minority people that are facing these grand juries? Those grand juries were set up by Robert Mardian, who's a member of the espionage squad and was behind all of this, the funding, the destruction of evidence, the planning operations with Hunt and Liddy. He conceived the grand jury inquisition system. So it's time we do away with the grand jury totally as it was constructed. It doesn't represent the people. There's a lot of facets, you see, of the Watergate that we're going to go into as time goes on, and I'll be writing about it, and keep your eyes open. Why do we have to go to the grand jury if he doesn't? Why can't we just tell some judge, some honest judge, not like Judge Colvin up in San Francisco, that disgusting spectacle of the Rochelle McGee trial. He says, don't use your compassion or pity on Rochelle. Why not? He's been, you know, 17 years in jail for not committing any crime. Isn't it time he got out? But you take someone like Sirica and you line up your judges and get your investigative teams to find out who's part of their team and who's part of the people's team. Why should anyone have to go to a grand jury anymore? And if they're arrested on a grand jury, they throw it out and say, look, the top dogs don't use it. Why should we? If something isn't good enough for them and you accept it for you, then you deride yourself. This is a lesson I learned from a friend of mine. If you accept anything that isn't good enough for the person who gives it to you, then you must think less of yourself. They think less of you, and you think less of yourself. You don't have to accept it if they don't have to accept it. If he doesn't trust his FBI or his government, why should we? Then it's time for a Nuremberg trial and impeachment of the whole group. And we'll be doing this. There's going to be something down in Los Angeles in the early summer, a Nuremberg trial for the people of California, for the public officials and law enforcement agencies that have planned murders and conspiracies. And I'm going to talk to you about it. Minority people, their phony CIA coroners, like Brian Stewart saying justifiable homicide. You see, this thing is going to go on and on because the branches of that conspiracy of the Watergate come to California. Mr. Kalbach, Mr. Segretti, Mr. Evel Younger, the whole law enforcement team, Mr. Peter Chang up in Santa Cruz. This is a whole team of people that have been working, pulling something on us, which is domestic counterintelligence. And a lot of people have been murdered that have been part of a domestic operation. So if he doesn't trust his FBI and his grand jury and his government, then you can believe what I've told you for 2 years on KLRB, that I know from 8 years of research that I don't trust them either. I have as much right to that opinion after cross-filing their Warren Commission report. Now, here's the thing that's important, and this is how I got the lead on the Watergate. I am proud of it, but I put a lot of work behind it. The article we did in The Realist, I dated it July the 11th. I gave it to Paul Krasner July the 11th because within 3 weeks, I could do the framework of how the entire operation worked. And whether or not people believed it at the time, I'm certainly getting calls now from New York, Ohio, all over the country that have read this little magazine and believe it, and it's a little background of how this system works. I took apart for 8 years the witnesses before the Warren Commission, their testimony under oath, and compared it to commission exhibits and broke down the whole modus operandi of our intelligence operations against the people. Because that's what it is in this country, a civil war against the people. We're going to spend about 10 minutes about international capitalism and the ITT, because if you're reading that alongside the Watergate at this point, it's all spilling out there, and the way they're financing and operating is the way they worked against us. And I think I mentioned last week, if Mr. Allende can take to the United Nations how they work against him, the people of the United States, having no Justice Department, no one to go to, can take it to the United Nations, too, that we are the victims of the same kind of a system. Well, I cross-filed the Warren Commission report for 8 years, and I had built myself, you know, hundreds of notebooks of commission documents and came out with classifications that fit into the Watergate thing, and some of them are listed in the article in The Realist. I covered briefly, because I went to press in 3 weeks. We were anxious to get out before the conventions in Miami. I could have kept going, but we had a cutoff date so we could get out and get to congressmen and the news media, the Washington Post and New York Times, to give them a framework of what was really going to come down. So in 3 weeks, I gave a few examples of how this was an espionage plot. I went into the cover story, the intelligence agencies used, the deniability, the dummy fronts. I referred to the realist three, this was in July, incidentally, about James McCord. I'll digress. It says McCord Associates is an example of a dummy front. I gave the kind of operations they have, and I mentioned he left the CIA after 19 years and opened a place in Maryland called McCord Associates. And at the time of his arrest, Maryland Secretary of State showed they were not incorporated into an investigative agency at all. The incorporation finally came weeks after they had the contract to represent the Republican National Committee, and I went into the fact that McCord's sister, Dorothy Berry, works for an oil company in Houston. Well, I've checked that out with people in Houston that read The Realist. It's the Humble Oil, and I have the chain of command of McCord's sister. She didn't know that she was on the board of directors when he was arrested, and McCord's was not licensed to perform security services by law. I knew that by July 72. The charter had nothing about security work. They were called business services, studies, analysis, reports in connection with business, industry, and academic institutions. Well, it came out just this week that McCord Associates was non-existent, that John Mitchell was the only employee, the committee to re-elect the president was the only person that used McCord Associates. And in the back of the article, I had questions that would never be asked by the government when they prosecuted them or by the investigators. And one was, what other clients does McCord Associates have? They had none. It came out just this week. McCord Associates had no other clients. But the operation was exactly like my work on the Warren Commission report. It went into, besides dummy fronts, the funding, the washing of all of this money, which, remember, in July, I didn't even bring in the Mexican Bank or the Miami Bank, but I knew how these things were going to be traced, the communications and radio control, the aliases, migratory birds, the way the men shifted their jobs, the housing, the double houses, the use of local police, the use of the military, the Treasury Department, the Justice Department, the FBI, the Dirty Tricks Department, the cities and countries involved, the coincidences, which are never coincidences, the witnesses that wouldn't be called, and the questions not asked. Now, I listed just a few examples because it was just a short article. Now I have like 300 denials, you know, about 20 aliases, about 100 or 200 witnesses that should be called that won't or haven't been yet. Questions, countless questions that haven't been asked, and I will keep giving them to the Senate committee until we just nudge them along in letters. But all the elements of the Warren Commission were here. You had people that were killed immediately, witnesses, like when Oswald was arrested shortly after the rooming house lady was dead, Mrs. Roberts, the bus driver, Mr. Calley, the cab driver, Whaley, everyone that was a witness that he didn't really take the bus, that he got into a car in the front of the depository and drove off in a white car that belonged to Michael and Ruth Payne. Anyone that would disprove that he went out of the front of the building and not on the bus, was dead. Well, a lot of people died, but in this case, so far, Mrs. Howard Hunt is the victim of death. Howard Hunt pleaded in his case before the judge. He says, I've lost so much. He wanted leniency on his case the other day. He says, due to my involvement in the case, I've lost everything in life that I value, my wife, my job, my reputation. Now, Mrs. Hunt went down on the United Airlines, we've talked about on a lot of these shows, taking 45 civilians, a United Airlines plane, bumping into a house, destruction of property, congressmen, people just going off at Christmas time to do their business and using United Airlines for espionage. That's the plane where the pilot had cyanide poisoning before landing. Mrs. Hunt had the names, she had CIA money with her, defense money. He says she was going to invest it somewhere. That was never checked out, what she came with that $10,000. She had the name of a neurosurgeon. I think this was to alter the men's minds if they didn't plead guilty. Mrs. Hunt never made it to Chicago. She died. Mrs. Andrew Topping died. She's the wife of an extreme right-wing man who had an appointment at the White House who was arrested for going to kill Nixon between the nomination and the election. That's been hushed up terribly. I sent letters to the committee investigating Patrick Gray. What about Andrew Topping's death in that particular? Mrs. Topping was murdered, according to her husband, by their own team. And Mrs. Hunt was dead, evidently, because of their team. This is what he's saying. G. Gordon Liddy, the New York lawyer who went from New York to the Treasury Department, the espionage agent who conceived of the secret funding where they would have to divulge the money to legal counsel for the committee elected the president, went to his cell because he was the first one who got his sentence. And he went to cell, and he was supposed to go to the grand jury. He was flown from Connecticut on to Washington to testify at the grand jury, but he was 4 hours late this week because his ear was cut and his life was threatened in the jail. They put him in with some, you better believe it, that was some nice juicy provocateur, and they had a little fight over a hairbrush. You can see Liddy the first day in jail. He's about to go to grand jury investigation, and he says, no, that's my brush, and the other one says, no, that's your brush, and they try to take off his ear. He had his little altercation. By the time he got to Washington, he wore his little brown suit. He didn't want his prison suit and his handcuffs. He pleaded, I'm not going to say anything to the grand jury. I think his ear was still hurting, and he's not going to tell the grand jury because he's in jail. You see, the others are still out. Now, James McCord says, I'm afraid for my family. We've talked a little bit about families. I'll do a whole show on that someday when the news quiets down. And Martha Mitchell says, I fear for my husband's life. I'm really scared. I have definite reasons why I can't tell you. If you hear I'm sick and can't talk, please, please send someone to find me. The name of my article was called, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? She said this week, I haven't been so afraid since they injected me with something, beat me. And the man who did it was Steve King, who was promoted to the head of the committee to reelect Richard Nixon because McCord was arrested. And she also said that McCord had bugged her apartments. And in the article I mentioned in July, that the bugging went right from the Democratic headquarters up to the Mitchell apartment. And I was sure that dinner arrangement at Taft Shriver for the Mitchells that weekend was all set up so that their apartment was clear. And now it turns out that John Mitchell had advanced knowledge of the Watergate breaking. I don't know how I had so much nerve to say all of this in July, 3 weeks after their arrest, but I was so sure of the team. I'd followed their way of operating for 9 years that I was willing to put 9 years' reputation of research on the line because I hadn't published anything yet. I had the outline of 5 books, and I came in on the Watergate instead of on the Oswald and carried it, you know, and we'll be doing it from now on. So you have people killed like Warren Commission, Ruby and Oswald, 109 people directly related. You have people threatened, like Jack Ruby's sister, hundreds of witnesses. You can't talk or you'll be killed. They were threatened. People were afraid to talk. They still are. There are people that send letters to me. They're afraid to call. And some people call. They're afraid to write. People are so afraid and intimidated to really express what they feel or think, you know, that they're being followed or bugged if they question this government. And there's only safety in questioning. You can see now, as it comes down, your only safety is in getting it out. There was no safety in ignoring it like any other disease, and it is a disease. Now, in the Warren Commission thing, I had lists of evidence destroyed, and I talk about this on various shows, like the lampposts in Kennedy's car, and in this case, at the Watergate, the shredding machine. The whole team went out to California on the weekend they were arrested. The whole team was in California. Patrick Gray, Robert Mardian, Charles Colson, Dwight Chapin, Hunt, Liddy, the whole group. The FBI is supposed to be looking for Hunt, 150 agents. He's out in California with the team. Kalmbach, Nixon's attorney, took Martha Mitchell to the hospital. She said this week, don't you think it's funny? How come nobody says that Richard Nixon's attorney took me to the hospital when I was drugged and beaten up? And nobody saw anything about that, what he was doing there? And she says there were FBI men in the room at the time she was assaulted. Martha Mitchell asked afterwards, why don't you arrest somebody? I was beaten up and assaulted. They should be arrested. She said this week, I haven't named them yet. FBI people watched her thrown through the glass, her phone off the wall, taken to the hospital. They watched this. This is our FBI, not the one you see every night on the TV show, if you watch TV, the great FBI story. Now, all the elements were there. Remember how Jack Anderson put down a few years ago as balderdash, not a few years ago, but 9 months ago, a researcher worked on the Kennedy assassination and conspiracies in this country, and we did a show on KLRB called Balderdash, and I challenged Jack Anderson to come to Washington and bring my research and name all the elements involved, not knowing the man who sent him the document, who lives in San Francisco, involving the president, the CIA, the Justice Department, the Treasury Department, the Cuban exiles. He said, balderdash, you couldn't get this team working together. And wasn't the man who gave Jack Anderson information for 20 years, Frank Sturgis, Mr. Fiorina, arrested at the Watergate Hotel, the Cuban contacts of information for Jack Anderson? If he told about the political assassinations, wouldn't he lose a lot of contacts, like maybe the ITT memos or the Cuban story or the Miami scene? See, in exchange for his getting some hot stories, he keeps the other ones quiet. And this is the disgusting thing about this country or Newsweek or these newspapers breaking these things now. They wouldn't expose it if McCord didn't expose it. They didn't edge Gray on with all these inconsistencies. They play the game to keep it quiet and put down McGovern all this summer and all that fall, pretending nothing was happening. There's been studies out about the New York Times keeping the lid on things, I think, except for the Washington Post, L.A. Times a few articles, and the New York Times a few articles. The Watergate would have trickled along and come out anyway, but everyone was so scared. And now they can't avoid it. They're there to sell papers, so they're telling you about it. That wasn't their choice. We have things like patsies in the Warren Commission report. We have certain patsies. The patsies in this case were going to be Liddy McCord and the five Cubans. They refer to them on the television as the five Cubans. It's so disgusting, like Hunt and Liddy are out on bail, but the five Cubans are doing this. They use the blacks, they use, like Tacla, they use Chicanas, like Martinez. They use the racist thing. They use the anti-Castro Cubans. And then when they're locked up and no bail and the others are out, they're not American citizens that fought in World War II. They're just known as Cubans. I hope that every man that would be hired as a provocateur or an agent or a double agent in this society is watching what happens when they're through with you. You are expendable. Don't take the job. They have no use for you. Anyway, you sabotage your country, you risk your children's lives, your lives, and they have no use for you when you're done. So that the seeds that I hope I plant is that people that are listening, whether they're on this peninsula, it's a military peninsula, and there's a lot of agents. A lot of agents are doing a lot of crappy stuff, turning in their friends, and a lot of them are going to talk like James McCord, and they're going to realize that they're only tools of a repressive false system that's falling apart so quickly they can't even pick up the pieces. They're going to use they wanted patsies on Liddy McCord and the five Cubans, but McCord's talking. And so we go on to another problem. Two things I wanted to talk about. We've just got 5 minutes. One is the ITT thing. Mr. Janine, head of ITT, gets up there and testifies that the reason they went in to overthrow Bloch Allende's election in Cuba was to save the world from communism. Well, this morning on television, I very seldom watch early in the morning, but Nicholas von Hoffman was on, and he gave a rundown of the capitalistic system as through the ITT explanation, and he said, you're now witnessing international capitalist conspiracy. Now, this is exactly what I tried to say about the whole Kennedy assassination, that Martin Luther King was gone in this country. We had an international communist conspiracy. We had an international capitalist conspiracy. And they both use the same method. They lie, or they kill, or they sabotage. The only difference between the communist conspiracy and the capitalist is that the wealth remains in the hands of maybe 5 or 10 families, in fact, 10,000 families, with the capitalist conspiracy, the exploitation. Is such that only a handful of people have the goodies of the world, and then the rest have to go out and manage. They have a buffer of a middle class in between, and then the rest have to manage some way. In the communist group, after they overthrow a country, like Marxist has done, like a Marxist like Allende has done, or Castro in Cuba, the people have a better chance to rebuild themselves without the wealth of millions and billions being in the hands of a very few. And the methods of getting wealth in the hands of a very few is done by people like Mr. Janine and ITT going in and saying, here's $1 million, block Allende. What do you think happened in the United States? Who gives Richard Helms the orders those agencies, they're put in there. Who appoints Helms? The president. Who puts the president? The conglomerates, the corporations, Howard Hughes, ITT, or General Motors, or Rockefeller, and the oil people. They put up the money from the profits of whether it's oil or minerals or energy or labor. They put up the money for the candidate. And the candidate in office appoints the head of the department, like Justice, CIA, Commerce, Treasury, to serve their needs as a chain of command. That's capitalism. And meanwhile, what Mr. Janine is doing is, he says, I went into Chile to block the election of Lenin because he's a communist. But this week, he was making a deal in Russia to build Sheraton hotels and send them Avis cars. Well, what's the difference? The difference is that he goes into Chile and takes the copper and the oil and the minerals, and they use the space satellites and the ocean scrapers to take away the Earth's resources and the people working for hardly anything in those copper mines. Then they take those profits and buy Avis cars and hotels for the middle class. And when the middle class is comfortable, they don't care about the guy who's digging the copper mine. And there's a whole cycle there. The profits of the slave labor in the diamond mines and the copper mines goes to a handful of people, and they reinvest it to keep the middle class happy. And if the middle class is happy, they let them drill oil in another country, and they start the same process over and over again. So that a crust, a lower group of people, do all the work and break their backs like they would pick the cotton. They run the factories, they do the hard labor work, and they're kept there. And the other ones reinvest the profits of that labor to keep the middle class going. That is international capitalist conspiracy, and I hope that people will understand. It takes time to study the ITT, it's important. But it fits in with the way that our country was overthrown. What you're seeing with Alendi, because he brought up the United Nations and it's a hot issue, is exactly what happened in the United States. We were overthrown by a few corporate people putting money into the White House and into the man who appoints the heads of each of these departments, and they serve the corporation. So as the Watergate unfolds, we're going to talk about every week and see if we can get a little more sense and stop this killing of those candidates and those public officials that represent the people. Now, I did want to talk about Marlon Brando. We're running out of time. We only have 1 minute, about his speech about television and movies and how degrading it is, why he wouldn't take his award, because it's so degrading to depict the American Indian as savage and evil and as a hostage. I have 5 children. The oldest is 24. We've got television in the house. I have never let them watch a show without my permission when they were growing up. They saw no cowboy or Indian movie in all the 24 years since television was invented, when Marvin was a baby. I've never allowed it, and I've stood by certain commitments that Brando's talking about. And if you want to open the archives, turn off your TVs, turn the sets away, watch one show like The Pueblo, have a boycott, and tell them to open the archives and find out who's killing who, and then we'll really get some truth when you start a boycott of the media and don't watch their lies and get their programming. Well, that's it for this week. Next week will be even better because Mort Cord's singing like a baby, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you very much, May, for your enlightenment. This is KLRB FM from Carmel. May will be back next week, Thursday evening at the same time.